Welcome to Healing Place Church, where our mission is to be a healing place for a hurting world. We hope to enrich your life through reaching, serving, giving, and building. As you listen to this teaching, be inspired to fulfill your God-given destiny through the power of His Word.
As we're talking about together, the greatest together that God ever blessed me with is my wife, Roxanne. She is sitting over here in her beautiful pink, looking great, and showed up. And I'm going to tell you what, it is a miracle that we are together for a couple reasons. One, she is way out of my league. But number two, I am really stupid. And God blessed in the midst of my stupidity. And I'll tell you why. I just am such a practical person that I don't understand that not everyone thinks like I do. I'm not a touchy-feely person. I'm not a real emotional person. When I talk to you, I'm pretty much a give the facts person. And so I just want to give you the facts. And I figure you'll deal with the facts like I deal with the facts. And so not everybody's like that. And so I can remember I almost lost her. And she doesn't know I'm telling this story. I didn't know she was going to be here today. I almost had to change my message. But I almost lost her our first Valentine's night that we were dating. And see, again, practically, I know because I used to work in a restaurant, the restaurants are packed on Valentine's night. They're empty the night after Valentine's. You don't have to wait. And I could see the look on some of your women's faces like, bad idea. Not only that, the flowers are like 50% off. I'm not making this up. Our first Valentine's, we're dating. I'm like, baby, let's go out the night after Valentine's. It's the same. We can dress up. We can give each other the same cards. I'll still give you flowers. She did it, but she was not happy about it. One of the most uncomfortable dinners we have ever had. I've never known her to order two lobsters before, and she only ate one. And it gets better. And so we're sitting there eating dinner, and I'm thinking, somehow, I have got to redeem this. This is not going well. And so I had this idea, once again, a bad idea. And here was my bad idea. If you take nothing else, especially all you single people out there, if you take nothing else in this message, do not take dating advice from Michael Howard Heyman. He has an incredible wife, but that is all the grace of God. And I had heard Mike one time when he was preaching, when I used to help out in the student ministry when he was preaching. And he talked about this story where when he and Rachel were dating and they didn't have any money, they went to Walmart and they bought cards. They separated and they bought cards for each other. And then they came together and gave each other the cards. And I'm going to tell you, he made it sound like the most beautiful moment you can imagine. And then I think they actually put the cards back. They didn't even buy them. Cheap. Cheap. And I'm telling you, he tells this story in the student ministry and women are crying. Like, that's so beautiful. So I was like, baby, here's what we're going to do. Yeah. We're going to go to Walmart. And I was going to go one better. We were actually going to leave with the stuff that we picked out. And said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to separate. And we're going to buy each other a gift that represents our commitment to each other. And I thought it was so beautiful. And so here we are on the night after Valentine's in Walmart separating. And I went and I picked her out. I found this little box. And it was so cute and it was decorated. It had a lot of pink on it. I know she likes pink. And it was like a little keepsake box. Because one thing I know about Roxanne, she likes keepsakes of special nights. So even if we'll go on a special date, she'll take something from the restaurant, or sometimes we'll go away for the weekend and she'll bring like the hotel card and, you know, kind of keep that. And so I knew that she liked keepsakes from certain things. And so I was like, babe, we came together after about 20 minutes and I was like, baby, I got you this nice little box. And so for all of the memories that we'll make in the future, you can keep them right here. And I was so proud of it. And I looked at what she had, and she had a pair of scissors. Yeah, so I'm a little scared. And a trash can. And I'm like, what is that for? She hands it to me. She said, this is for all the pictures of your old girlfriends. And I was like, ooh. She wasn't kidding. We brought home that scissors and those trash cans. Let me tell you what I realized that night. First of all, don't take dating advice from Mike Heyman. Secondly, it was time for me to go to a whole new level of commitment. Because, see, I'd kind of been hanging on to those pictures and memories of a life past. And I thought, well, maybe if this doesn't work out, and what she was letting me know, and thank God that she did, is that it's time to go to a whole new level of commitment. See, that's not easy because our culture, 21st century American culture, we don't value commitment. Really, the highest values in our culture are options and convenience and freedom. We want to be able to move in and out. We want lots of options. Don't lock me down to one thing. We're that kind of culture. But here's the problem. You can't have the freedom of non-commitment and the benefits of commitment at the same time. At some point, you have to choose. So at that point in my life, I let go of some of the freedoms and I began to choose commitment. But here's the deal. A lot of times we're in this series on together. We come together as a church. We treat church the same way. We want the benefits of commitment, but we want the freedom of non-commitment at the same time. And I wrote down three things that I think kind of symbolize our culture. And it's not necessarily anything wrong with them, but the thing is, it's not healthy when we bring it into a church context. I think number one, we are a Walmart culture. How many of you love Walmart? I don't like to go to Walmart, but I love the idea of Walmart. I love the idea that I can go in one store, get a loaf of bread, some cereal, some diapers, a DVD player, tires for my truck, and mulch for the front yard all at one spot. I don't have to go all over town. And here's the thing, I can get it at a low price. And that's a great idea. It's a great idea that Sam Walton came up with. It works great for Walmart. It doesn't work great for church. But for some of us, that's what we want. What we're looking for in a church is a place that has great music, great sermons, activities for my kids, a good sports program, and all at a low cost to me. And some people, when they're literally shopping for a church, that's what they're looking for. We almost have a checklist as we walk in. This one had 4 out of 5. It gets a 4-star rating. We want a superstore mentality. And look, there's nothing wrong with the church offering all those things. We try really hard at Healing Place to offer as much as we can that are benefits to people. But we don't want to have a consumer mentality when it comes to church. You know, the other thing that I think symbolizes our culture, we are an on-demand culture. How many of you love on-demand? I love that. I want to watch what I want when I want to watch it. I mean, isn't that the idea? When the first time I saw an iPod, and see, I didn't even really have a CD player, so I was still in tape mode. And when I found out you didn't have to buy the whole album to get the song that you wanted, and you could go right to that song. Because you remember back when you heard a song on the radio and you had one or two choices. You could stand there all day with your tape recorder and wait for that song to come on. You remember, record and play. But the DJ would talk all over it. Or you went to the store and bought 9 songs you didn't like to get the one song you did like. And then you had to sit there in your car because it was never the first song and do this. No, that's not it. For 20 minutes just to get to that one song and then rewind it. I love the idea that I can pick the song I want to listen to. I can pick the TV show. I don't watch a TV show when it comes on. I watch it when it fits my lifestyle and my schedule. Once again, great for entertainment. Not a great value to bring into the church. I want church to fit my life. I want on-demand church, my lifestyle, and my time. You know, the third thing I wrote down was this. We have a Red Bull culture. And apologies if there's anyone here that's a competitor to Red Bull. I don't drink a lot of energy drinks, so I don't know what else is out there. But I can't tell you how many times I'll talk to somebody. Man, I need a Red Bull. I need a 5-hour energy. I need a cup of coffee. I need a Diet Coke. I mean, we live in a culture, we run so hard that at some point during the day, we need an energy boost. And then, again, there's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes we bring that into church. And all church is it's an energy boost. It just makes me feel good. It makes me feel strong. And then I can get through the week. And at the end of the week, you know what? I'm going to need another Red Bull. I'm going to need another spiritual energy boost. I think that's a lot of times how our culture sees church. But the question is this. How does God see church? What did God see when he created it? And as we look into this, I want you to open your Bibles to Acts chapter 2. Pastor Dino talked about this passage last week and did a great job. And he pointed out how often it says that we come together. So he talked about not being a no-show. But I want to look at it from just a slightly different angle. And I want you to help me out. It's going to require participation. I want you to notice how many commitment words are in these verses. Acts 2, 42 through 47. So I want you to do this. Every time you see a word that kind of talks about commitment, I want you to raise your hand. Let's practice. Everybody raise your hand right now. All right. And look, there's no right or wrong answer. So if you're the only one that raised your hand, just go with it. Maybe the people around you aren't paying attention. But I want you to notice the commitment words in this. Look in this. Acts chapter 2, verse 42. It says, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, to the fellowship, and to breaking of bread, and to prayer. Look at this next word. Everyone, not some, not most, everyone was filled with awe, and many wonders and miraculous signs were done by the apostles. All the believers, again, not some, all the believers were together and had everything in common. Look at this whole next sentence. Selling their possessions and goods, they gave to anyone as he had need. Every day, not when it fit their schedule, every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And Pastor pointed this out last week. And the Lord added daily to their number those who were being saved. You see, this wasn't just a community that was committed to Christ. They were committed to each other. And what we see here is that when I commit my life to God, I commit to God's people and to God's house. It's not just about me and Jesus. When I commit my life to God, I commit to God's people and God's house. And here's the thing, it's easier to commit to God than it is to commit to God's people. One, who really knows? I mean, honestly, who really knows if I'm being committed to the word that God is speaking to me? Who really knows? Anybody in here except maybe my wife really know if I prayed at all this week? If I lived a holy life this week? But when I say I'm going to commit to you, then you know whether I'm committed or not. And so a lot of times it's easier to be committed to God than it is to be committed to God's people. But God commands us that when we commit our lives to God, we commit to God's people and we commit to God's house. Look at what Paul says in Ephesians 2:19. He says, consequently, you are no longer foreigners and aliens, but fellow citizens with God's people and members of God's household. You know, I talked about Roxanne and I's relationship. When I married Roxanne, and single people don't understand this, when you're trying to figure out who you want to marry, what a lot of times we don't realize, until sometimes it's too late, not in my case, is that when I married Roxanne, I just didn't marry her. I married her family. It's not just about me and her. Now, I married her family. She married my family. In fact, more than that, I became a member of her household. I became a member of her family. And now I have all the rights and responsibilities of the May family. And let me tell you this, I got the better of the deal. Her mom and dad are still trying to figure out what they got in the deal. But sometimes I'll tell, you know, when people are getting married and they talk about the person they're married to, I say, well, that's great. But understand this, you're not just marrying her or him. You're marrying their family. And spiritually, it's the same way. We don't just commit ourselves to God. We get all the crazy uncles in the process. All the crazy aunts. We commit ourselves to God's house and God's family. And that's the way that God intended it. If you look through the Bible, God is always creating communities. He didn't create Moses and just say, go obey me. He says, Moses, lead these 2 million people who will complain the whole time. If you look at Jesus, Jesus didn't walk around and preach. What's the first thing he did? He created a community. He began to call people to them. In fact, as you read the Bible is written to communities. There's only a few books in the Bible that are written actually to an individual. And what do we do when we read the Bible? And look, I do the same thing. I open up the Bible and say, what is God saying to me? And that's not a bad question. But you know what the real question is and what the Bible is written for? What is God saying to us? Because I don't exist on my own, just me and God. I exist in community. And so how do I do that? I have to become a member of a church. Not the church, because that's a little too easy. And who really knows? I have to become a member of a church. I live out my commitment to Christ in the context of relationship. And here's the other thing that I do. I let people know that I'm committed. See, another thing that our culture loves, we love nobody really knowing what we're doing. And isn't that why one of the reasons we shop online is because nobody really knows what we buy. You don't have the clerk bugging you. You kind of like to get in and out and be anonymous. And sometimes in church, we do this. We do the same thing. And what the Bible tells us is not only do we commit, we have to let people know that we're committed. Have you ever needed something and then somebody tells you later, man, you should have asked me, I had it. Well, you should have told me you had it. If I don't know that you have, if I don't know that you're committed to help me, then how can I take advantage of it? And what the Bible lets us know is not only do we commit to God's house and God's people, we have to let them know that we're committed. What if I'd have never told Roxanne about the love in my heart? What if I'd have never told her? What if I'd have said, I love you, but I never said, baby, there came a point. I am committed to you. And you need to know that. Commitment has to be known. It has to be shared. And so what we really do, and Pastor Nino talked about this, is we become a member of a church. And sometimes that seems like such a stale word, church membership. All church membership really is discipleship in a local context. That's all church membership is, discipleship in a local context. Because what is discipleship? Discipleship is following Jesus. Isn't that what Jesus did? But as you read the Gospels, it was a whole lot easier to figure out what to do right then. Because as Jesus was walking this way, and he would stop, follow me. Okay, that means you walk this way with Jesus through Israel. And he would stop and grab somebody else. And then we think, okay, well, how does that work now? Acts 2:42 lets us know. When we follow Jesus, we follow him in the context of a local church. And so I just want to share this with you. I thought about this. I want to give you three reasons why I personally am committed, not just to the local church, but to this local church. And one of the reasons is not because it's my job. I mean, it kind of is now, but it wasn't always that way. I was committed to this house way before I ever thought. In fact, I didn't want to be a pastor. Roxanne didn't want to marry a pastor. I came home and told her, talk to Pastor Dino, I'm thinking about coming on staff at Healing Place. And her response was, oh, great. That was not what she envisioned for her life. She thought she married a football coach. I don't know what that says. But when I thought I would coach all my life, I made a decision, and Roxanne and I together made a decision to be committed to this house. And I want to give you three reasons. Number one is this, and it kind of wasn't that way then, but it is now. Number one is my family. I believe it's the best decision that I can make for my family. Not only does it help my marriage, being in learning context, like Life for Marriage, how many places do you get an opportunity to hear Brother Wayne Austin for 13 weeks pour into your marriage? That doesn't happen very often. And to hear him and Pastor Dino and Mike Heyman up here talking about relationships, I'll talk to guys that never go to church and I'll realize unless they had an incredible dad that was a great husband, where do you learn how to be a husband and a father? You know where I learned? Besides my dad, I learned in church. But not only that, what is most important to me now are my children. 3 John 4 says this, I have no greater joy than to know that my children walk in the truth. Brother Wayne says it a different way. He says, you're only as happy as your saddest child. Now that I have kids, I understand that. And I want them to walk in the truth. And that's why I love the fact they're not in this service, but next service, they're going to be sitting right over there. And they're going to be learning about the gospel. I was so excited a few weeks ago when I went to pick up Josh from his class. And he came out and he had his little paper. And he couldn't wait to tell me the story of Moses and floating down the basket. In fact, during VBS, he came, when I was picking him up and bringing him, he told me, he said, Dad, I want to be on the worship team. And I'm going to tell you what, it excited my heart when Johnny told me he wanted to play football. And when Josh told me he wanted to play baseball. But when Josh told me he wanted to be on the worship team, it was such a bigger deal. Because I know the best way for them to live fulfilled is to walk in the truth. And not just learning opportunities. I walk down to the annex sometimes on Wednesday nights. And I see a junior high and high school students jumping up and down, passionate about worshiping Jesus. And I think, I can't wait till my kids are in that environment. And for the life of me, I can't understand why any parent of a teenager would not make sure that their kids are at the annex on Wednesday nights. Because I know when my kids are in high school, I'm going to need all the help that I can get. I don't depend on the church to raise my kids, and I don't depend on the church to teach them about Jesus. That is my job. But I'm going to need all the help that I can get. And I don't want to take the chance that my son, best friend, will be his person who sits next to him in class, or somebody that's on the football team with him, and I have no idea what that family's values are. Because I really believe for most of us, we are who we associate with. I want my son's best friends to be right here every single Sunday and every single Wednesday. I want those to be the influences on their life. And I know that the second most important decision that my sons will make next to committing their life to Jesus Christ is who they choose to marry. And I've joked about it before, but it is the honest truth. I want my sons to meet their wives right here in this building. In fact, to be honest, I've already got a few picked out. I am all for arranged marriages. But I'll tell you what, it's where I met my wife. I committed to this house, and God blessed me with an incredible wife, an incredible kids, and an incredible place to raise them. And I want to make sure that they are in that environment. And if I only bring them to church when it's convenient to me, and they see that I'm not committed to the house of God, when they grow up, I don't believe they'll be committed to God. You know, we talk a lot about why we're losing our youth. And we blame it on services for the kids that are not relevant and how bad the world is. Let me tell you something. I think the number one reason that we're blaming, that we're losing our youth, is parents who are not committed to the house of God. Because the Bible says, train up a child in the way he should go, and all his ways he'll not depart from it. And so look, we're guarding influences and all that kind of stuff. But I know the most important thing I can do for my children is to make sure that the house of God and the people of God are a priority. Let me tell you, the second thing is this. I don't want to live my life and get to the end and it never made a difference. It scares me to death. In fact, this year I turned 40. And it was hard for me. Not because I'm losing a little hair up here. And I am. Some of y'all are noticing in the screen. I see you. It's not because I'm just older. It's just there's something about 40, and I don't know if it's this way for everybody. It was for me. At 40, you kind of are what you are. I mean, at 20, you can talk about what you're going to be. At 30, you can talk about what you're going to be. And I'm not saying that you can't change after 40. I'm trying hard to change in a lot of areas. But you just can't always talk about the future when you're 40. So I really took a little, you know, thing of my life, began to look at my life and thought, what am I? And I want to make sure, I'm scared to death that I'll get to the end of my life and my life never made a difference. I never helped the poor. I never helped the lost. I never helped those that need Jesus. I want to make sure I am making a difference. And look, the most important thing to me is my family. And please take this in the right way. That's not enough. The most important thing to me is my family, but there's something on the inside of me that says, I want to make a difference in the world. I want somebody to miss me, even outside of my family, when I'm gone. I want it to make a difference. I want to leave a legacy. I want to know I'm making a difference in the inner city. I want to watch those commercials about starving children in Africa and not just say, what can I do? I want to know I'm doing something through Children's Cup. And the best way to do that is in the context of the local church. In the context of a local church, I am making a difference in the world. Now, could I do it outside of the church? Of course I could. But the truth is, most people don't. But through the local church, I'm helping the poor of Baton Rouge. I'm helping those in Africa. I'm helping people every single weekend by creating an environment where they can come to know Jesus Christ, and lives and marriages and generations are changed because I committed to God's house and God's people. It's not enough for me to just wake up every morning and read my Bible and know that me and Jesus are okay. I want to commit to this house. And I'll tell you this. God has blessed us in this house with incredible opportunities. The Bible says, to whom much is given, much is required. I can't stand before God and say, God, I didn't know how to help Africa. God, I didn't know how to help the lost. You know what he would tell me? Every single Sunday, You saw on the screen, you knew on the stage, an opportunity to make this world a different place. Not everybody can say that, but I'll tell you what, the people in this room can. And I'm going to be held responsible for all those opportunities. And you know, the last thing is this. I commit to God's people and God's house out of obedience to Christ. And that's the most important thing. John 13:34, Jesus said this. His last night, as he's talking to disciples, you would think he's telling them how to preach, how to pray for people, how to do miracles. This is what he said. So now I am giving you a new commandment. You know, sometimes we want to act like there are no commandments in the New Testament. That's all Old Testament. Jesus said, I'm giving you a new commandment. Love each other. And you know what? He's not talking about the lost here. Of course, Jesus loved the lost. But he was telling the disciples, you better love each other. And just in case you don't know what that means, let me explain it for you. Just as I have loved you, you should love each other. We should have the same love for those in this room that Jesus Christ had for us. That is a generous, extravagant, sacrificial love. And then look what he says here. Your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciples. That's an incredible phrase. He doesn't say your billboards are going to let people know that you're my disciples. Your commercials on television are going to let people know that you belong to me. Your Christian t-shirts and your Christian music, your Christian wristbands, they're going to let people know. In fact, you know, he doesn't even say this. The fact that you feed the poor and preach the gospel is going to let people know that you're my disciples. You know why he said that? Because Jesus said, many people will do those things and come to me and say, Lord, Lord. And he'll say, depart from me. I never knew you. You know what he said? Your love for each other is going to let the world know that you're my disciples. You know why that is? Because you don't see love like that very much. In our culture, you don't even see it in families very often. But when the world sees a community of people love each other, committed to each other, let people know their commitment, take care of each other, then the world says, they look like Jesus Christ. The preacher on the corner may not, this person may not, but they look like Jesus Christ. I think one of the main reasons that the church has lost influence in the world, it's not because the world's getting so bad. It's because the world looks at the church and sees the same values they see everywhere else. The building looks different. The music sounds different. But the values are exactly the same. And they're looking for a community that has Christ-like commitment to each other. And here's the thing, and Pastor pointed this out last week. Look back at Acts chapter 2. And look at what was the result of a community of people that were not only committed to God, but they were committed to God's house, and they were committed to God's people. I want to read the whole thing again. It says, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe, and many wonders and miraculous signs were done by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common, selling their possessions and goods. They gave to anyone as he had need. And every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And then look at that last line. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. You know what's interesting? As you read the book of Acts, you don't see them leaving their community to do a lot of stuff out in the world. You don't see them even doing dream centers and some of the things that we do that the Bible commands us to do. Those are all great things. We think, well, then how did the church grow? Because the people on the outside saw something that was irresistible. They saw something that they said, I just have to be a part of that because there is a peace there and there is a love there and there is a commitment there. And in a world where everyone's always looking to get what they can get and take advantage of somebody else, my next door neighbor is part of a community that is the total opposite of that. They put each other first. They don't care about their own needs. They take care of others. They are committed to each other, and their commitment to each other is known. And the Bible says the Lord added daily to their number those who are being saved. The best outreach is an irresistible community. You know, I thought about this, Psalm 68:6. We quote this all the time. It says, God sets the lonely in families. And as I prayed about that, I said, God, help me create a family that you would want to bring the lonely to. We don't want lonely here. Are we just a service? Are we a building? And there's nothing wrong with saying, I'm going to church. But that's not really what church is. Are we the type of family that God would bring the lonely to? And you know what the other result of that was? I love what it says. They ate together with glad and sincere hearts. Their love for each other just brought them a full heart. And when we try to just serve God outside of the context of relationship, and really, I believe, outside the context of a local church, it's just not as full. It's just not the same.
Thank you for listening. For more information about Healing Place Church, go to healingplacechurch.org or give us a call at 225-753-2273.